Tony Boynton is with us to kōrero about Māori wards, a vital mechanism for Indigenous representation in local government, now subject to referenda in many districts, including Whanganui, where voting banks, as we mentioned, were sent without candidate profiles for the Māori ward. Tony, thank you once again for sharing some thoughts and time with us here on Wā Te. Tēnā koe.
Oh, tēnā koe, Dale. Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Obviously, a bit hoha that they would throw a referendum of this nature at us as we vote for local body elections. And, of course, we know turnouts are pretty slim in local body elections. Let's hope that the referendum associated doesn't get the wider traction, bearing in mind the expected smaller numbers. Let's start with what do Māori wards mean for our manamotuhake, our tino rangatiratanga in our communities, and fair representation at a local level. I mean, they're but one perspective, aren't they? They're not the dominant perspective, but still a welcome perspective when decisions are being made from a Māori read anyway. So they hold some value. What do you think the major advantage of a Māori ward is, Tony?
Oh, well, they're hugely beneficial. Just like any part of the community, having a representative voice like those from the rural community who have rural wards, Māori make up a large part of the community in terms of what they do and the difference of issues and what things are important to them in their communities. And it's important to have them there. Not only that, many of our Māori organisations, particularly in Whakatāne, are some of the largest employers in the district. We also have iwi who have a huge amount of assets and financial wealth. And they contribute to a lot of what happens within the district itself. So there's opportunities. It makes good common sense, but also good business sense that you would have a Māori voice around the table.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, though. So if the council are hell-bent on keeping Māori issues to the side or deprioritising them, then numbers would normally suggest that that's what will occur. Tony, what about your own personal journey? How's that shaped your advocacy for Māori political voice and visibility, Tony?
The personal journey itself has been great. It's been hard at times, but it's been really rewarding. It's been rewarding to see our Rangatahi. So you've got people like Jack Karitai who bike 900 km to Wellington to be able to demonstrate just how important he sees Māori wards. For our Rangatahi, them seeing us there, they see themselves reflected, and so they think, that's normal. And I've had so many whānau contacted me with their young tamariki saying, who's that lady? I want to vote for that lady. When can I vote, Mum? Does that mean I get to go in that place? Can I go and can I be a councillor? Can I be the mayor? So that whole shift in whakaaro just shows how much value it has for our community and especially our rangatahi. But also too, we've had councillors around the table who previously voted against Māori wards. And when it came to the decision for councils to vote to retain, they were one of the first to stand up and say, look, we need to get in behind this and we need to back it. All the things that I was told about Māori wards simply isn't true at all. And, and that's the turnaround, that's the difference.
Hobson's pledge has had a lot more influence than it, well, I'd suggest deserves. Have they been active? I recall when Māori wards were planned, they'd whack full page ads into the local rags and get people supporting their idea of these referenda, which we're witnessing anyway here, Tony. Have they been active in and around your community of late?
We haven't seen anything visible as such, like in the traditional forms of newspapers, but what we have seen is through social media. And they do have groups, they've sort of morphed, so they use Taxpayers Union, they use the Freedom Speech Coalition, they use the Rights Coalition, so they use these sort of AstroTurf groups to be able to funnel their narrative through to these other kinds of groups that have been around during the anti-vax campaigns and other anti-co-governance campaign groups. So they've got a network that they they sort of filter through. So they've been using social media and those avenues quite strongly.
Tēnā koe. Thank you. How important is this issue then, as we receive our local body election packs? Mine arrived, I think, the last couple of days as well here. We know that the sluggish turnout is 27% for the by-election. I guess 30 sometimes is deemed a pretty good response to local body elections. What do you get in Whakatane? And what would you say to those who perhaps have sat on the fence or not bothered with, you know, in previous local body election cycles?
I think it's pretty difficult. That's why our last for Whakatane was 43%, which I think wasn't too bad. But that's why the electoral reform working group from RGNZ, headed by Nick Smith, were part of being able to put together a paper and also a set of recommendations from a report that was calling for to ways in which we can increase voter participation. One of those ways was to centralise the election. So I really want to acknowledge what's happened in Whanganui and Wairarapa. It's absolutely disappointing that at such a critical time for Māori wards candidates and also for the Māori wards referendum in those areas, the fact that that independent private company business who runs the elections left off the Māori candidates from the candidate booklet is going to have a huge impact, not only on the voters who need to vote for those candidates, but also the referendum, Māori wards referendum, which the information should go to both the general and the Māori ward voters. So that's hugely disappointing, and I feel aroha for those areas, particularly if their voter turnout is impacted by that. And I would definitely think that there would be a case there to challenge what the outcome would be.
Tēnā koe, are you satisfied? Because I've been a bit critical of the comms coming from the Electoral Commission and its failure at times to connect and enthuse Māori voters. I wonder how you gauge the, you know, the packs in the mail, the orangeness of everything. It almost feels like a one-size-fits-all rather than something specifically directed and targeted at our people to try and get them, as I say, enthused and involved.
Oh, definitely, definitely. There's so many barriers when it comes to being able to encourage our whānau to vote. So as a Māori ward candidate, you have two campaigns. The first campaign is to educate, is to raise awareness, is to sort of do those things, go into those spaces in which you try and encourage our whānau to vote, because the traditional, like you say, the status quo doesn't work and it has never worked. And so you've got to do that, and then you campaign about yourself. This time round, you've got Māori ward candidates who are doing three campaigns: education, Māori wards education and awareness, and then trying to get themselves elected. Not only that, but all Māori ward candidates are capped at what they are able to fund themselves with for their campaign. So, for example, in my ward, the area of Whakatane and Ohope, a general candidate has up to $14,000 they can use to be able to market themselves. A Māori ward candidate has $3,500, and we've got to reach the hardest people to vote. It's crazy.
Thank you. When we convene a panel talking about the communications in our electoral system and also some of the refinements that we need to accommodate our youthful population, Tony, I'd love to get some perspectives from you as an experienced hand here, because, you know, to continue to get these postal voting forms at a time when even New Zealand Post have cut, well, they deliver to my joint 3 days a week. So it's not like it's the constant of yesteryear, and considering everybody now has electronic accessibility, surely some system could be devised so that we could vote using our phones or the like. It just seems so antiquated. But we will reserve that for another discussion, I suggest. Mm. Appreciate your thoughts.
There is a recommendation in there. I mean, there was a big push about the digital voting, particularly from our Māori sector within local government. And we keep on getting the reasons back, which is about security. But what we did manage to do is put in a recommendation about overseas voting being electronic. So you receive an email, you use codes to be able to vote. I think that opens the door so that we have some traction so we can see how that works, and then hopefully in the future, because mail is going to be gone, you know, by the 2030s. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I just think it's something, and as I say, we're disadvantaged because of our youthfulness as a people. And, you know, let's use the tools at our disposal.
Definitely. It would make it a lot cheaper. You know, the cost of post itself on councils and running elections is massive. If people are able to, and the whole fact about having an address to post to, you know, if our whānau are able to do it electronically, they have a real me ID, then it's going to help increase the votes because the access is easier.
And let's face it, when was the last time something nice came in the letterbox?
It's usually those numbers, it's usually those bills, isn't it?
Absolutely. None of us are used to getting a letter from Auntie anymore.
No.
Hey, good talking to you again, Tony. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, Dale.
Kia ora. Bye.